Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hello.
I had a weird thing happen there.
Okay.
But we're okay now. So the story is I was on, Lauren and I were both on Top 4 this week with the Armitts.
Ah, yes, I saw
because
that.
Because couples podcasting is apparently a thing that they're trying to make happen. And that requires a totally weird setup in my Skype, which is why you couldn't hear me. Because I have to, so we had two microphones, right? And Skype is wonderful. Oh, Skype. Skype will only ever take the first track of any input device. So I discovered this at Macworld when we had like five microphones, four microphones around the table. And like the people on Skype could literally only hear the person on mic number one. And so what you have to do is either send people an alternate audio source, or you have to do some flim-flammery. In my case, loopback and audio hijack working together can route all of, or in this case, both of those microphone tracks into a single virtual track that gets sent over Skype. Anyway, I was still on that and I didn't have audio hijack turned on or feeding that input, the loopback input. And so, nothing came out. So there you go. There's some podcast nerdery for the beginning of this year podcast. How about that?
That is some super nerdery. It's true.
How's it going?
It's going okay. It's still hot here in India.
All right, it's cold and raining.
Giving you the updates.
Okay, good. Good to know.
But the time in Mumbai, it is running short.
Yeah, so. I'm disappointed that you didn't get out to see the test match with India and England.
It was on the TV in the place I was in today, but I really wasn't paying attention.
Well, I mean, so our friend Steven Schepansky tweeted an image about last night, late last night for me, about cricket being on TV because he's kind of become a cricket fan. I was there. I was present when he was indoctrinated into the ways of cricket by Paul Cornell at a Doctor Who convention. And nerds. Anyway, sports nerds. I love it when sci-fi nerds and sports nerds collide because that's my sweet spot. Anyway, the picture was like live from Mumbai, and I was like, Dan, get over there. There's
cricket
happening.
Match. That's true, but I feel like I've got time because those games take days.
And I'm sure. Oh yeah, it's still going on, and I'm sure that you could just walk right in because I mean nobody cares about cricket, right?
Oh yeah, it's very very quiet
in India. Actually, everybody cares about cricket. Sorry, I got to be fair. With the United States, where nobody cares about cricket.
A few weeks ago, I was going to dinner, actually to a movie across town, and we drove past a large concert that was being done here. That was like I don't remember if I think there was a cause or something behind it. And headlining this act was Coldplay, and apparently, I think Jay-Z. And it turns out that for whatever reason, everybody here loves Coldplay and nobody cared about Jay-Z, which seemed like a very, very strange sort of affair. But we drove past it and it was like there were thousands of people there. It was totally packed.
Wow.
So you never know. You never know. Maybe the cricket match, maybe it's empty. I don't know.
I don't know.
My biggest exposure while being here was that we finished watching the movie Lagan, which is a Bollywood movie that I think was nominated for, if not won, sort of best foreign film at some point in the early 2000s. And it's about a cricket match in the 19th century, I want to say, 1800s, so during the British period. Basically, they challenge to get rid of the taxes that are being levied on them by the British. They challenge them to a cricket match. And of course, it's like a team of misfits thing, right? Like they don't know how to play cricket and anything like that. It's entertaining and notable, if not only for the fact that the main antagonist, who is the British sort of military officer, is played by actor Paul Blackthorne, who is now on Arrow.
Yeah.
So I kept being like, it's Quentin Lance. Why is he being so mean, though?
And English.
So English. Because he's English.
Which he is, actually, in reality. That's the. I had to get over that when I was watching, God, what was it? The Hour, right? That's got Dominic West from The
Wire. Dominic West, yeah.
And because for a while he was only doing TV shows that were like The Noun, but it's like, why is he acting all English? It's because he's English. That's why.
Yep. But it does have what it does. My favorite bit about that is when he's, I think it's in the second season, The Wire, where he pretends to be British and puts on a really bad British accent, which is impressive if you can do a bad version of your accent on top of an accent you're already doing.
Yep. That was a moment.
I wish I had seen that reviewed in a few weeks back. There was a nice video on Wired that was critiquing accent performances.
Yeah, that was great.
Which was amazing. I wish they had done that one because I think that was amazing. They did mention Idris Elba and including his performance in The Wire, and they gave him pretty solid credit, I think, for many of his different portrayals and accents.
He does good accents. The thing I got away from that video was that... basically, if you have a dialogue coach and time, you can do an accent, especially since you've got all the dialogue given to you in advance, everything you're going to say. I actually would go so far as to say, I bet most people, or at least many people, even non-actors, if given a few weeks and a dialect coach and a script, could probably fake an accent for the words on the page. And that was his point, was this is not the fault of the actors. These are trained actors. They could get it right. This is because they weren't given time or they weren't given help. Or they're jerks. Or they're jerks and refused the help. But it seems unlikely that was the case because they're probably going to be ridiculed. Maybe Kevin Costner refused the help for Prince of Thieves.
Well, it was interesting when you saw the comparison of the same actor in different roles, right? And I thought there's several mentions of Brad Pitt in there. And some of the accents are not great. Like he does a German one in 7 Years in Tibet. That's not great. And he does an Irish one in, I want to say, The Devil's Own. Which is also not very good, but then they have him in Snatch doing the Irish gypsy accent, which is a very weird accent, and he sounds great in that one. And so it's like, it's clear that, you know, it really is so situationally dependent, right? Like it's not necessarily, like, as you say, it's not up to them.
Yeah. Hey, what's going on? You've been writing stuff for Six Colors. It's great. I wake up in the morning. Oh, Dan wrote things. We're also working. We should say, we're also working on like our holiday guide, best of the year, blah, blah, blah kind of stuff that I think next week we're going to post.
I think we can call it annual now. This will be year three. Yeah. I was going back and looking at some of our picks from the last couple of years.
You know,
we can safely say third annual.
Our good friend, Mike Hurley, would have declared it first annual.
I know. He's so aspirational.
I just, you know, don't, you gotta prove yourself first. But now this is three in a row, so I think we've nailed it.
I feel good. I feel good about it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of those picks. I think we're going to do some stuff that we haven't done in years past. Going by what's in the Google Doc, I feel like there's at least one category that we haven't done prior, which I think will be fun.
Yeah. I struggle to find, I mean, in a year, I don't really add that many new things that I love. And I keep putting down the names of things that I'm like, oh, I'm sure I didn't talk about this last year. And then I look at last year and I'm like, yeah, it's there, right? Like, I didn't even know I was using it. Have I really been using that more than a year? And that's the problem, is that if you looked at my five favorite Mac apps over the last 10 years, they would not have changed very much.
Yeah,
so you try to find the novelty and not write about, like, I'm not trying not to write about BB Edit every year.
We kind of managed to sneak one in with Scrivener, since even though we've written about the Mac app both of our past years.
Yeah, but
this
iOS
year
app now.
We had an iOS app, so at least it's new and different. But I agree with you. It's funny to think, like, you know, I look at my my iPhone, right, and I have so many apps on my iPhone. I have well over 100, 200, I don't know. But then you realize, like, how many of these are things that I actually use regularly, and the number drops very sharply for me to probably 20.
You know, I actually have I want to say this is sort of a CGP Grey method of iPhone, which is I have two screens now.
Mm-hmm.
My first screen is the apps I use all the time and I want instant access to.
Yep.
And there is 20 of them, including the dock. Mm-hmm. My second screen is just folders. And honestly, it could be one folder. Because really, at that point, the way I'm working is, if it's not on the first screen, I search for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. It's either on the first screen or I'm just going to search for it. I don't need to page through screens. And not everybody's going to do that, but I it really works for me. And so that answers your question. 20. I have 20 apps. You know, it's not baseball season. That one would be in there too, and it would be 21. And occasionally I'll move something in and out. But basically 20 apps that I use at all, enough to put on the screen. And that includes some utilities like the Settings app, which is like, hey, everybody, best of the year, Settings.
Settings. Well, I'm similar. I have a slightly hybrid method there in that I have, I think, three pages, which is apps I use all the time, apps I use frequently, but like you know, not regularly, but not never. And then the last page is just categorized folders, but more often than not, I'm just searching for things that aren't on the home screen. I agree with you on that. And that's, it's one of those things that makes me feel like I know the home screen on iOS has been there a long time, but that it could use some refreshing, because when you get to that point of, I've got apps I use a lot. And so it would be nice if there was a way that I had a screen where I got more information from those apps, because clearly those are the apps I care about. And then everything else was relegated to folders / searching. And like, I would be totally cool with that. I don't need page after page of icon, because at that point it becomes useless. It's like the emoji picker, right? Where you have to like scroll through and find the emoji you want. It's like, great, like I've got my recently used bunch, and it's like, okay, I use those a lot, so that's great. But like so many of them, it's like, if I want to find one particular thing, especially on iOS where the emoji picker kind of sucks, like it takes forever. So yeah, I feel like maybe 10 years in, maybe that's the time for them to spruce it up a little bit, but I'm also not really holding my breath about it.
No, I mean, we expected when the iPad came out that weird, like, super wide grid of on the home screen of the iPad wouldn't last, and it's just, it never has changed. So I guess Apple thinks that the Springboard is fine.
Look at the Apple TV. It's moved over there now.
Yeah, it's... I do wonder what... I would bet you, again, I don't know, but my guess is I tend to give Apple credit for them thinking about things. I think a lot of people, when Apple doesn't do something, they're like, man, why doesn't Apple do it? And the answer is probably that Apple tried to do it and said, that's not good. We're not going to do it. Right. So my guess is, my gut feeling is, they've tried modifications to the Springboard, and somebody or everybody has said, yeah, you know, everybody likes the Springboard, and this kind of messes this other part up. Let's just not, you know, let's not go down that path. Because they, you know, those widgets that are on the in the notification center screen, it's like they probably tried those out on the Springboard, and we're like, nah, this doesn't work. They take up too much space. They're, you know, why not just have it be behind a 3D Touch or a swipe or something like that? But I do think about that. Like, they've got the, you know, when you swipe down, you get the Siri app suggestions, which is sort of like you could have done smart folders or a smart screen with suggestions for apps. And they're like, nah, we're going to make that down, you know, a swipe down instead. And it's like, fair enough. Maybe that's a better way to do it. I don't know. I just...
Or maybe they haven't found the better way yet, right? And I can understand not wanting to constantly... You don't want to keep changing it, because, like, you've seen that with other things they've done. Like, I think the music app comes to mind for me. Like, it's been changed several times in the last few years, and sometimes they make like drastic changes, and it turns out those drastic changes are bad, and then they have to change them again, and it turns into a whole mess, right? So like, at a certain point, it's like, well, the Springboard is iconic. It's the thing everybody deals with every day. You don't want to screw it up. And so the answer is, if you aren't like 100% sure that you're really improving the experience for most people, maybe just leave it alone until you figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah, I think that that's probably it, that it's so important. And we know, like, when like iOS 7 changed so much that people freaked out, because it's like, I mean, my mom still is afraid to update her iPhone when there's a minor software update, because she's like, it's not going to change everything again, is it? It's like, no, that was the one time. Right. That was iOS 7. That's the only time that has been like a huge change. But it really bothered people. And the Springboard is iPhone, right? It is the round rect icons. And I mean, it is iconically part of what makes an iPhone. So I get that it's hard for them to step away from it, and maybe the right thing to do is to leave it alone. But it does. I mean, their expansions are things like swiping to the left to get the widgets and swiping down to get the Siri suggestions. And, you know, 3D touching on icons is a thing you can do that does expand it out. I think now, and if not, it probably will be next year, like Major League Baseball, like on Android, when I try an Android phone, because I do have a Nexus 5X, I think. I put those little widgets, like the Major League Baseball widget, I put that on the home screen so I can see like the Giants score. And I think if I 3D touch on the MLB app, it does the same thing. Like Apple's just said, you can't glance. We want you to keep the glance clean. But if you do a swipe or a 3D touch, you know, and is that better? I don't know. I mean, those widgets are fun on Android, but they take up a lot of space.
Right, sure. Yeah, I think it basically, it just gives you the same widget when you 3D touch on something if you haven't assigned it to the dashboard already, I guess. But Yeah, I think it makes a valid point that there is a lot of the screen real estate there is really valuable, and you don't want to muck it up with a whole bunch of stuff. And I think the widgets are a nice improvement in iOS 10. I've really enjoyed them for the most part. Still interested in something like complications for the lock screen, which I also think is really valuable real estate that's not being used much. But it's nice at least that you have the widgets accessible from the lock screen now. There's progress, but you're right that they Apple obsessively tests all these things, it feels like, and sometimes there are still missteps. I wrote the piece the other day about the viewing downloaded music in the music app, and I think some parts of the iOS 10 music app have improved certainly over what we had before, but I think it's still kind of messy and a little weird. Some of that is that it was changed at the to fit with Apple Music. And as someone who has Apple Music entirely disabled, it's a little weird as an app. It's not the most useful app in the world, but it's better than, I think, the iOS 9 version. It has some nice touches, but it is also a very frustrating app at times.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that makes it hard to find favorite apps, is what I'm saying.
Indeed, indeed.
That's where
Mac is even harder, I think, because it's just been around so long, and our workflows get so set that it takes a lot to like disrupt that or add a new tool to that. And I go looking for new tools a lot because I want to find stuff that's like, oh, this is great. Like, this helps me do this thing that I could never do before. Or, you know, this totally changes my experience of using the Mac. But like, you know, after 30 years... It seems like what is there left to do at times, right? Like, I'm sure there are great apps that come out, but the number of great Mac apps that appear in a year is probably, you know, a couple.
Yeah, exactly. It's
or that I discover even.
Well,
yeah.
And for me, so all my choices this year are like based on weird needs that I have that are, they're esoteric, but they're like, I need a tool that does this on my Mac, because the bread and butter stuff really hasn't changed for me. Like, I'm still writing things in BBEdit, and I've written about it. And, last year I wrote about Slack because I started to use Slack a lot last year, and that has continued. So this year, it's like an app that checks my broadband, like my bandwidth usage, and an app that is monitoring the state of my Mac, because I was wondering about like my network traffic for podcasting, and the tool for ebooks, and a tool for removing audio noise from audio, and transferring files for podcasting. So it's all like deep down in the weeds kind of stuff, but that's kind of all I'm left with is what workflows did I change this year that required me to discover some new tools? Because the workflows that I kept the same are the same. And so I'm doing them, and I think there's value in us restating like our Hall of Fame, our best stuff. When you're doing the end of the year thing, you kind of want to have it be new.
Right. Yeah, I have a similar issue for sure. I think about things that make huge impacts in the way my workflow has changed over the last decade or something. And I think like, oh man, Dropbox. Like, how did I ever get anything done without Dropbox before? But it's like, at the same time, you're like, everybody knows about Dropbox. Like, that is not an interesting thing to write about. Maybe there are tricks and interesting things you can do with it, but it's hard to dredge up those new major sea change type apps. For several reasons, including not least of which is like, we don't want to screw with our workflows that much, right? Because to a certain extent, we've gotten very good at our workflows. And so adding new tools often has a lot of resistance, because the question is, what makes this better than what I already have and have been using for so long? So like, I had people ask me, I talk about stuff like Authy, which is an app I recommend again this year. And I love it. It's great. And I had someone, when I mentioned it a while back, and maybe you and I both talked about this, I think, on Twitter, and someone asked why we didn't use 1Password, which also supports verification codes for two-factor. And I guess my short answer was, I don't know what it improves that's better than Authy, and I don't want to spend the time it takes to move to an entirely different app. Though it's an app I use for other stuff, like, what am I gaining from this transition? And, will it compensate the amount of time I have to spend to get everything working perfectly again when it already works well?
Yeah, by the way, I have an answer for that because I'm thinking of moving from Authy back into 1Password. I'm part of it is just that I set up Authy and it's separate and that's fine. But I do use 1Password for a lot of things. I've been using 1Password for my Dropbox 6-digit code just to try it out. And I'd say the big difference is 1Password will give you the code on the Mac. And Authy won't unless you like do its weird thing that it'll try to let you like look it up via Bluetooth from your phone, which is not that great.
That thing does not work.
No, so that may be reason enough for me to move. The challenge is that in general, it's way easier to get to your one-time codes from Authy than 1Password. When I need to log into Dropbox somewhere, I have to open 1Password and unlock it and search for Dropbox and bring it up and then put in the password, right? Unless I'm in a place where it's going to contextually, I can do the share extension or something like that. And that's less convenient than open Authy, you know, see a list of my things and tap on the one that I need. And there it is. It's just a quick step.
The Dropbox thing is funny for me too, because it always ends up with a weird setup there where if I'm setting up a new phone or something like that, since my 1Password vault is in Dropbox, if I haven't yet set up Dropbox on that phone and my Dropbox password is in 1Password, but it hasn't synced because 1Password's not on the phone yet or not set up correctly, you end up with a really bizarre like, oh, crap, this is like the, and it's like Dropbox is like one of those crazy secure passwords I have that's randomly generated, so I have no idea what it is. So that's always exciting when I realize I think I have caught myself in a catch. Like if I didn't have another device, I would be kind of screwed right now. But that's just what like just occurred to me when you mentioned Dropbox and 1Password. I have found myself in the conundrum a couple times in the last few years.
Yeah, it's I don't know the answer. I mean, but we hear that a lot, and forgive us when you hear us like rolling our eyes at it, but we hear it a lot, which is, why don't you use this other thing that I use and I like? And that's okay. Why? We can answer why. It's more annoying when it's, I can't believe you didn't recommend the thing I use. It's like, well, believe it, right? It happened. And we probably have our reasons. I mean, I get that every time I mention Twitter things, I hear from 1,000 people who say, but Tweetbot. I'm like, I am aware of Tweetbot. I have Tweetbot on iOS and Mac. I just don't use it. Like, I can't believe it. Well, believe it. I choose not to, but I am aware of it. I know that that product exists and I can use it whenever I want to check things out in it. But, you know, so this is an example of that, which like we mentioned Authy and everybody's like, but what about? It's like, well, you know, there are reasons.
Can you also not believe it's not butter?
I believe that it's not butter.
I very much believe it's not butter.
Behaves very differently from margarine.
It's true. Yeah, no, I agree. And everybody has their preferences, right? Like, I use Tweetbot. I'm also aware of Twitterific and have Twitterific installed on everything. And sometimes I use it.
I can't believe that you don't use
it. I know. It's shocking. So, you know, guess what? There are different people with different tastes. Whoa!
Yeah.
But yeah, so all of that is a long way of saying that our end of the year lists take a little bit of thinking because it is tough to find new stuff. And some of it, I especially think some of it is tough when just some of the categories we use, because I think one of our categories, we talked about games, and I think you had very optimistically written iOS/TVOS games.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm not sure there are any TVOS games on that list because I have not played any that I would really
actually,
like. This is amazing.
I'm probably going to recommend, even though I'm playing it on Xbox, I'm going to recommend the Jackbox Party Pack because that Party Pack 3 is on Apple TV now.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested.
And that's a good time, as we know from playing it. We played it in a hotel room in Anaheim with all the incomparable panelists.
Great.
And I was laughing so hard. I was afraid I was not going to be able to breathe. And tears were streaming down my face. I was laughing so hard. It was amazing. And the third version is available on Apple TV. And like Sketch Party TV, which is another Apple TV game that I've recommended in the past, I think mentioned last year, in fact. It's one of these games where the TV in the living room or whatever is the mediator of people, but their controllers are on their phones basically, and you basically go to the Jackbox TV website and log in and with a code, and that's your controller, and you answer questions or you sketch something on your phone or your iPad or any device that's got a web browser, basically. And and so most people have one of those, and you can play these party games, and they're great. But they did an Apple TV version. Now, I haven't tried the Apple TV version, but I can't imagine that it's any different, really, because, you know, you don't even use the Xbox or PlayStation controller once you're going. It's basically all just it's running based on the input from the different phones. But so I'm going to mention that one, and I think there might be another Apple TV game that I've tried. But yeah, it's not, you know. That's not what I use the Apple TV for. Like, what do I use the Apple TV for? And the answer is, you know, AirPlay and renting movies from Apple. And at this point, that's and access to other things that are like I will do HBO Go on my Apple TV. I will do there's a the I did a Mystery Science Theater 3000 Kickstarter, and they use a service called I think VHX to I got like 10 old MST3K episodes, and those are all on VHX, so I can watch them there whenever I want on demand. They're in my little library there, so I've got some stuff like that, but that's about it, right? I'm not that's all I'm really doing there, because my TV does Amazon and Netflix and YouTube, and my TiVo does Amazon and Netflix and YouTube, so I really don't need the Apple TV to do that too.
It's fine. My Apple TV is my default watching, in part because of Hulu and Netflix. And also because of things like I now watch a lot of stuff in the CW app because they took all their stuff off Hulu. And so I end up using my Apple TV as default. Even though my TV does some of those things, I just don't like the TV interface as much.
Well, I've got a 4K TV.
Fire TV is
so
my backup.
I got a 4K TV, so theoretically the Netflix and Amazon apps are giving me the higher quality stream. They're giving me the Ultra HD stream, so I use that for those. And then everything else, it's like, you know, it's in the TiVo. It's super convenient because you can actually like add a show. Like Lauren watches The Mindy Project, which is a Hulu show now. Mm-hmm. And we have a season pass for that on the TiVo. And all it really means is that you're looking at the shows that you can watch and your streaming shows are there. And you're like, oh yeah, there's a new episode of that. And you click the button and it loads the Hulu app and starts playing the episode. It's like, that's convenient. That's really convenient.
Which is, I think, what Apple is sort of trying to go for with its TV app.
That's exactly it. If only, and that's a great segue. If only
segued.
Apple could get could connect with everybody, because Apple basically now has built this TV app interface where it'll connect with shows on different apps, and it builds a catalog, and apps can tell it what shows it's got, and it lets you kind of like have your favorite shows, and that's great. Apple also built the single sign-on so that you can sign in one time for your cable provider, and then it'll work with apps, and you don't have to like go to a web page and put in a code or anything like that. Great, except they have almost no partners for any of those things.
Yep. and it's been impressive. They have expanded a little bit even in the couple days that they've had it out there, in that I think several of the Disney and ABC have already signed on, which may be some of the for the apps. And that's the problem, is like, not only do they not have, you know, cable providers, big cable providers, like there's no Comcast, there's no Verizon, Time Warner, Charter, Cox, all those big guys, like none of them are there.
Yeah, the satellite providers are there, but that's funny because the satellite providers aren't internet providers generally. There is satellite internet, but basically, you know, their subscribers have a separate broadband connection.
Right.
And so they're kind of the cable providers, like, or the satellite providers, like, fine, great. Yes, let's do that.
And
let's encourage people to stay with us.
And the internet TV, so you've got Sling and DirecTV,
which
both now have internet-only packages. But yeah, none of the big guys. And even moreover from there, the app thing, I'm guessing that just a lot of the apps haven't yet to be updated to support single sign-on. But the weird thing about it is that since TV app is on both iOS and tvOS, there are some apps right now that support one and not the other. And that, to me, is just like head-scratching.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I'm not shocked, because it's the TV industry, and as we've seen, they love to be incredibly granular about what rights they're ready to give up. I mean, for example, I think still there might be still some shows on Hulu where it's like, oh, you can watch this on your computer, but you can't watch it on any other device. And it's like, why? And it's because they're scared of TV set-top boxes. I think in the long run, this is, again, this is the cable companies shooting themselves in the foot, because I think this is a nice feature, and I don't think it really detracts much from what they are already doing. You know, you can already log into all these apps with your cable provider. Apple's just making it easier to do,
right,
which will probably make customers more likely to use it. And they're still paying you, so there's not much downside for you.
And yet.
And yet.
I mean, some of it is going to be... I just used this on Clockwise yesterday. I think the Safeway example of, like, I'm sure Safeway wants modern terminals with my supermarket, modern terminals with card, you know, chip readers and NFC support and things like that. But to do that, they have to buy all of those, you know, they have to buy terminals for every store and install them in every store and probably change their whole back end system, or at least update it. And who knows what software that's running. That's the example I always give about, like, there's this obvious thing that should happen, and yet under the surface, there's this just probably ugly tangle of technology that leads to blockers that have to be cleared.
And
I feel the same way about this. Like, there may be politics involved in some of this, but you know what?
I bet there's some, because the FCC also wants to have its fingers in it.
Sure. And there's politics and strategy and all that, but I wouldn't discount the fact that, like,
it's old.
Implementing single sign-in using Comcast system, or, you know, like, or individual providers, individual apps, right? It's like, there also may be technical things that will take them another 3 months to do, because, you know, the way that this single sign-in is set up doesn't work with some part of their system. I'm just throwing it out there
it's certainly possible.
Not necessarily. There may be some technical issues here, too. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, why not? It's easy, right? But it may not be underneath. There may be something bad there.
The thing that makes me sort of, you know, roll my eyes a little bit at that is that there already clearly exists some sort of unified platform, because if you go on the web or you go to one of these apps and you open it up and it's like, you got to log in with your cable provider.
Yeah.
There are already hooks in those things for all the cable providers, right? Like, yes, they probably, some of them use different systems.
A lot of them just open a web browser, though.
Right, exactly. You could do that on a tvOS thing, right? Like, there is no web browser, but you could open a web view or something if you really needed to.
Now, that would be a unique form of single sign-on from Apple, is like Apple TV basically is like one passwording all of the cable logins. And it just, because, and you know what? They could do that, but Comcast wouldn't like that.
It would be
that
messy.
But they could totally do that, where they would say, like, oh, well, we know what the Comcast form looks like, and we know what the Time Warner Cable form looks like, and so we'll just take your data and put it in the form and log you in, right? They could do that,
absolutely.
But that seems bad.
It would break very easily. Is everything? It's web scraping, basically, right? Like, it would break very easily if they change anything about it. It's interesting for me, too. I'm curious to see how it works out. For example, I noticed that someone mentioned you can only put in one cable provider, which for most people, obviously not a problem. I will admit here on the podcast that almost all of the cable login stuff I use is my parents', because I don't have a cable subscription. But I do have the wacky Comcast cord-cutting streaming program,
right,
which does let me use the login for my Comcast for some stuff. So I will actually be in the weird position of, depending on the app, might need a different login. So that's bizarre. We'll see how that plays out. I'm kind of interested to see the way it's handled.
Oh, what a mess. TV, what a mess.
What if yours is just a device and you could turn it on and it would just start showing you content, and then, like, you press like a button on your remote and it takes you to like another stream of content? Like, I don't know, maybe I'm being crazy here.
That's totally
amazing.
But
I feel like it could work. Like hot and cold running water, but television.
That's a $1 million idea, Dan. $1 million idea.
After taxes, it's a little less.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, definitely before taxes. $1 million idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, what else? Anything else going on that we should talk about?
Maybe. There was the story about Microsoft running Windows 10 on ARM.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, and I went into this. I mean, I wrote that Macworld column a couple weeks ago, and I went into it on Upgrade a little bit about why I think Apple won't do... ARM Max probably. I heard from a lot of people who are like, oh, but did you see this thing about Microsoft making ARM version, you know, basically ARM emulation and building it into Windows so that there'll be an ARM version of Windows again? I wonder if All those old like Surface RT hardware, you know, will they get an update? Will they be able to use this? Probably not. That's too bad. Like, that's ARM. They could do that. Anyway, they're working with Qualcomm on it. And the idea is that, yeah, you're going to be able to buy laptops probably that are running on Qualcomm Snapdragon, you know, basically phone chips. And they will emulate x86 stuff, which will probably be, you know, slow because that's always the case.
Right.
And it seems emulation. This is kind of Microsoft like saying, sure, we'll do it and we'll see what the market says. Now, they tried this once before, although they didn't have an emulation thing in place and it kind of flopped. But it's possible. But it does bring up the question, like, if Microsoft's doing that, would Apple do that? And I don't know. I mean, I feel like the existence of an x86 emulator by Microsoft in Windows is not relevant to the to the conversation. I think the relevance is, wow, if Microsoft is hedging about x86 yes. versus ARM, that is interesting because you would think that that might be meaningful in terms of how Microsoft is viewing the future trajectory of Intel processors versus right. ARM stuff. And
It's more interesting politically than it is technologically, right? Yeah. Like, there's no, I think everybody who knows anything about Apple is probably convinced that somewhere in Cupertino, there is a version of macOS that can run on an ARM chip.
No doubt. 100%.
Because they want to hedge, right? Like, they're not going to tie themselves to any single provider of any hardware component because that is not what they do. And they feel super gun shy about it after all. They've done two transitions, right?
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to be caught with their pants down again.
Every 10 to 12 years, and it's been 11 years.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's there, and I think it's interesting from a political standpoint because we know that there have been at least sort of some frustrations, like it's certainly, you know, with delays in chipsets and stuff not shipping at the right times, right? And like, you know, there's a temptation inside Apple to want to be, have that control. Like, because there's so much level of control right now from, you know, soup to nuts, like, to add that extra bit of, like, well, we could just make our own chips and kind of, like, not have to worry about Intel scheduling. And I'm sure that temptation is there and gets brought up every once in a while. I think you're right that the way things stand right now, it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to make that jump. But the fact that, like, you know, they're going to have that Skunkwork project going and working and, like, having it functional and be ready in case they need to switch over, and having that there to, like, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a lever on Intel and be like, well, we've got, you know, maybe we don't need you. Like, hey, we've got another thing running over here. Like, that probably doesn't hurt to have in their line, in their arsenal either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I got a lot of, I mean, again, my thesis all along has been, I think the reason Apple won't do this, because, you know, every time I talk about this, people are like, but what about this? But what about this? What about this? Or I'll mention like reasons why it's makes it more difficult, a transition like Windows emulation and things like that. And people say, but does anybody do that? And it's like, none of the reasons that I've got are sufficient to stop Apple. Like, if Apple wanted to move the Mac, some or all of it, to ARM, to Apple designed A series processors, to collaborations with others, if Apple wanted to make x86 compatible ones with, but designed by Apple and from AMD, like, there are so many different possibilities. Apple could do all of them. Like, I can't find a blocker anywhere except that it'll take effort. And does Apple want to exert effort to go through a processor transition on the Mac, which is basically its legacy hardware platform? That's my question. And you know what? What I've heard from some people that I think is actually really smart is saying, look at the trajectory of the A series. Maybe now is not the time, or maybe now is the beginning of the time, but it's going to take 2 or 3 years. But if you look at what Apple prioritizes, which is absolutely true, which is thin and light, power, you know, efficiency, yep, stuff like that, A chips, you know, ARM chips are really good at that. And if they think that in the end that's where they need to lean, and that Intel is not leaning in that direction, they may go there. It may take time, and they may start small. I mean, I think a lot of people really expected the original MacBook to be an ARM device because it's underpowered, but it's super thin and light, right? You could have made that, and maybe they just weren't ready to make that transition. I have a question about if Apple wants to maintain a platform with two different chip types on it, if they really want to do that, or if they're gonna rip off the band, or if they're gonna make a change, they're gonna rip off the Band-Aid and say everything is going ARM eventually. I don't know whether they'll do that or not. It could freak out people on the high end because we haven't really seen the processors in iOS devices are kind of down. In the, you know, the highest end iOS devices are about as fast as the slowest Macs. So, but, you know, they would need to design.
There isn't really a lot of a high end Mac department right now either, though, right? Like, that's the other thing that's challenging is like, you could never make an ARM replacement for the Mac Pro. It's like, there isn't a Mac Pro now. So,
yeah,
what's
but
the big
difference? But I've got a 4 gigahertz i7 in my 2014 Retina iMac, right? And there's no A series chip
absolutely not.
That can provide that level of performance to me. None, right? And I'm on an iMac.
I don't think they would go whole hog. I think you're right that the MacBook strikes me as the place that if they were going to dip a toe in the water, it would be there. But they would do it in such a way that it seems absolutely transparent and seamless. Like if you were using a MacBook and you put it down next to a MacBook Pro running an Intel chip, you would essentially not be able to tell the difference, right?
So if they do this, and again, I think this is my pessimism coming out here, which is I just feel like Apple is going to prioritize the iPhone over everything else, and and like taking any time away from designing processors for the iPhone to design something for a Mac when you can just take things off the shelf from Intel and it's fine. I keep thinking that like Apple cares about the Mac, but do they care enough to divert effort away from their chip making in order to make Mac chips? And as a Mac user, do you want that? Because it's always going to be like the last one in line for those processors, right? It's the iPhone always gets to eat at the table first, and then the Mac is so do those chips now get updated every, you know, 2 years or something like that, and we won't be able to point at Intel. We'll just have to be like, oh, I guess Apple was busy this year and we don't get any chip improvements.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's better. Maybe it's better because Apple can be on a year cycle with it like they are with the iPhone and the iPad, and it's linked with their product development, so it all moves together in lockstep. Maybe that's true, but I despair a little bit about like Apple prioritizing the Mac, caring about the Mac so much that they would go through another chip transition.
Yeah, I think it's more of a break glass in case of emergency sort of thing. Like if Intel truly, you know, is unable to deliver, or if Intel falls into the ocean or whatever.
Which is why the Microsoft thing does set off alarm bells, like we said.
Because
it's like that is Microsoft making an investment. Yeah, granted, probably Qualcomm is pitching in here too, but that is Microsoft going back to the you know, something that they tried a few years ago and kind of flopped, and now they're back at it again. And that's interesting to me. And that's that question of like, now there's more uncertainty about whether Intel processors are the future for computers. Now, you know, Microsoft, they get to like do both. And that's the question about Apple that I have is, would Apple do both? Would Apple start rolling out? It's entirely possible that it will be a very soft thing where at WWDC, Apple says, hey, look, We're gonna do ARM Macs starting in 2018, and here's all the stuff in Xcode to compile. Get your universal binaries out there now. You know, there will be emulation, but your apps will run slower. And you know, here is it'll only be on some systems, or it'll eventually be on all systems, or whatever they want to announce at that point. I mean, it could happen. You know, and that's the difficulty of going out and saying it probably won't happen, is that of course it could happen. Like the only thing here is Apple's disposition toward doing it.
Right.
I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because that there is absolutely a MacBook inside Apple running an A series processor, right? It's gotta be.
Yep. I agree. So
I don't know.
It's there in case they need it.
But imagine if they did a MacBook and the battery life was like it was the current MacBook, but the battery life was another 5 or 6 hours, right? I mean, that's kind of cool. That would be cool.
There'd be something compelling in that. And I say that as someone who's still toting around his 11-inch MacBook Air, you know, and really loves that machine and doesn't want to give it up for a MacBook. But the idea of a machine that is almost as small as this and runs like all day or whatever, like, wow, that would be a big, that would be kind of a game changer.
Right? It's, and you could argue that, that, on the, again, taking aside like the iMac, and maybe the MacBook Pro, where you've got like more processing power, I think you could make a solid argument that the MacBook and the iPad Pro basically should run the same processor. Like, the iPad Pro is a laptop caliber machine with a laptop caliber processor in it. It really is. And so you would think that something in that line would work. It's just when you move up the line, Apple has not yet built a chip that that can go further up. But they certainly could. And the question comes again, do they want to do that? But like, I do think the work that they put into the iPad could totally be done, just transferred to a thin, light, power sipping laptop like the MacBook. Like, it's done, I'm sure, done deal. Like, they could totally
I just totally had a flash to like a MacBook where you can just like has a magnetic screen and you take the screen off and it becomes an iPad and it's just like just switches over automatically into an iPad interface. I'd be like, they're never going to make that, but it sounds amazing.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
I kind of want one, even though I know it's a thing they will never do.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But if people are looking, this is the irony of it. If people are looking for a reason why Apple cares about the Mac and is putting effort into the Mac, going through a chip transition, I think, would be good evidence of it. At the same time, mark my words, if it happens, people will use it as evidence that Apple doesn't care about the Mac, because all they really want to do is make the Mac into an iOS device and just only have one source of chips, which is the iOS chip. So they're going to force the Mac to come over and be at the iOS level. It'll have, people will make that claim. There will be a hot take about that out there. But I would view it as, and the way that I'm really framing my entire argument here is, Apple wants the Mac to be fine and good and be the Mac, but putting lots of effort into creating a whole new generation of Macs and going through this transition, my feeling is that Apple doesn't care that much about it. Like, Apple wants to kind of like keep it steady instead. So if they went through this transition, I would sit up and take notice and be like, dang, they're really putting an effort into the Mac. Obviously it means something to them, because this is potentially interfering with their iPhone A series processor development, and it's orchestrating a huge from a developer's perspective, especially processor transition. I would take that as a sign that Apple is engaged in the future of the Mac, rather than sort of being willing to let it kind of continue to float like it's been.
Yep. No, I agree.
Yeah. Weird times. But
indeed.
We're on time for it. It's been, every decade or so, get a Mac processor transition. Woo!
Maybe they'll just go with something totally weird this time. Who knows?
Probably
just pick
not,
another processor off the shelf.
Yeah,
we decided to go back to PowerPC. There's still someone's still using it.
At long last, the G6.
finally, RISC processors for life.
G5 laptop.
Woo. Oh man, finally with the giant heat sinks, it'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got a 4 gigahertz processor now. They finally broke the 3 gigahertz barrier. It just took them, a decade.
Bit of a plateau there.
Yeah. Well, that is one last point on this. I totally get, like, Intel's got its issues, but Intel's also kind of at the forefront of a lot of this stuff. I think some people make the assumption that Apple's progress is going to continue at the pace it's currently at, and you look at Intel's progress and you're like, oh, Apple's totally going to catch up. I suspect that at least part of that, though, is that Intel has been pushing into territory that Apple hasn't pushed into yet, and that there's going to be diminishing returns as time goes on, and that in the end, Intel is still really, 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 really good at making microprocessors, and they have, and inventing new techniques, and that's going to be a challenge for Apple and its chip makers to go ahead with. Now, it may be that, one thing that doesn't happen very often is rumors about Apple making its own processors like making them, not just designing them. And right. I do wonder about that sometimes, that like at some point is Apple going to feel like we can't rely on Samsung's fabs anymore.
We got to build a fab.
We got to build our own fab because they're not pushing ahead and we're always going to be behind Intel's processes and Intel's techniques. That may not be true. The other fabs may be catching up to Intel. But when we talk about Apple being independent, all things have to be discussed. Like the source of the iPhone's processors being a third party factory, you gotta at least talk about it. I don't think it's likely, although I don't know a lot about chip processing and fabs and things like that. But like that's a place where Apple doesn't own the whole widget. Mm-hmm. Although for all I know, in some of these cases, like with the Foxconn stuff, Apple like builds the factory or pays them to build them a factory. So it may be that it's not Apple's fab, but it's totally Apple's fab. I don't know. It's weird. Processors are weird.
Indeed.
I don't believe in them.
They don't really exist.
I think there's just a little fairy that lives inside my computer and knows the answers to everything.
Yep. Don't let the magic smoke out, Jason.
Nope. You got to keep it in there. And the squirrel that's running around powering it. Yeah, feed the squirrel. That's why I jam a walnut into the air vent of my iMac every day.
That's what that's why people are so angry with them removing the SD card port. Yeah. Where are you going to stick in those? Where are you going to stick in that flattened
the cord? The cookie for the elf that lives in your laptop. Yeah. All right. Well, you have a good time in. Where are you going? The Maldives.
Yes, I will.
I'll
try.
That sounds spectacular.
It's gonna be tough. Dirty work, but someone's got to do it.
My only thing that I think of when I think about the Maldives is that that's where Saeed kills a guy in a flashback in Lost. Or no, a flash forward in Lost.
I was going to say, that seems like a weird place. Like, from everything I've seen about it, it seems like a weird place to kill someone.
Well, I mean, he's hunting down, like, an executive.
And
he shoots him on, like, a golf course in a place that looks like Hawaii. Because it's totally Hawaii, because they shot the whole show in Hawaii. But they say it's the Maldives.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Okay.
That's all I know about the Maldives is that it's...
I'll keep my eye out.
It's Hawaii-like and beautiful.
Don't go to any golf courses and get shot.
Watch out for Saeed. That's all I'm saying.
Good call.
All right. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. Dan will be... having a good time next week, but we'll be back hopefully in the next couple of weeks with more. And watch out for that holiday guide next week. And thank you for subscribing. By the way, there were a lot of renewals of the Six Colors annuals, especially in the last few weeks since we launched this subscription thing about a year ago. So thank you for your support. And if you got one of those emails saying that for some reason you didn't, you know, your card was declined or something like that, please look into that. I don't want to have to like change the podcast feed every year or so just to, you know, get away from people who aren't paying anymore. That seems kind of mean, but at the same time, this is for people who are subscribers to Six Colors. So if you are not currently a subscriber, please consider returning to the fold. All right, Dan, have a great time.
Thanks, Jason.
Enjoy the cricket.
I will keep an eye out for him. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.